It was changing, but I was still getting the top A's on Ave Maria.
We were still of the opinion that his voice was still very much just a treble voice.
This is the interesting thing. You are right to say your voice was changing on Chorist of the Year. Most boys who get that far, they do have changing voices. We rarely hear an unchanged voice on Chorist of the Year.
And you're expected to behave, well, more than like a professional, really. You're expected just to do exactly as you're told, to stand exactly where you're told, to wait as long as you need to, you know, all this kind of stuff. And yeah, I just wonder, do you have any thoughts on that? Is that, would you agree with that? Kind of, is it slightly strange?
So that was May It Be. That was recorded in May.
August 2021.
So whereabouts in my voice change journey do you reckon that was, Martin?
Well, that's interesting you should ask that, because May It Be is an interesting song. And there's quite a lot about it in the new book. And one of the reasons is it was previously recorded by a boy called Dominic Byrne, called himself Inigo Byrne, back in 2005. And we used Dominic's recording in the Boys Keep Singing films as an example of where your voice was when you recorded it, if that makes sense. And where it was what we call cambiata. Now, people misunderstand cambiata. They think it's just like a, you know, sort of tenory voice, but it isn't. It's actually higher, the first stage of cambiata. So your voice was at that stage where it could still sing up to a top G if it wanted, but it was more comfortable and richer down in the range from middle to treble C, perhaps down as far as A, which is exactly where May It Be was. Now, the interesting thing for me on this is May It Be was an Enya song. And I had some interesting reactions when I played Dominic's May It Be in schools. Boys who did a lot of singing thought it was beautiful, but boys who didn't thought it wasn't as good as Enya. Now, what's your reaction to that? And how do you position yourself against Enya?
Well, I think I did it very differently to how Enya did it. As with most of my songs, a much more kind of a different take on the song and a different way of singing it, and sounds a lot different to the original. And yeah, I think that that's just generally just different, so it's not really comparable. Is that a word?
Comparable.
Interesting,
because I think I recall Simon Cowell in his judgment on that day of your performance of Run. He said, you made that your own song, Cormac. I think you probably did, and you do.
It was a very different to the Snow Patrol version. I think, kind of unintentionally, I've done that with most of my songs, just kind of doing it my own way, not really giving it a second thought until people point it out,
Well, that's probably, you know, part of why you've been good at this, because you're just a boy singing, you're an artist, even at the age of 12. You know, I think I can say that without, you know.
Good.
Do you agree, Matthew?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's interesting as well with May It Be that, being from Lord of the Rings, you can see different points in the score of Lord of the Rings as well, where if there's something particularly otherworldly, fantastical going on, like, you know, moments where Gandalf turns up, you actually get that pure, clear treble voice coming through. So it's obviously the go-to sound for people that want to express something ethereal, and it would seem like that'd also be
magical,
true of the kind of,
even
when it's at that cambiata stage as well, that it has that unique kind of quality. Any thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, I agree. And the problem with Cambiata is that that first stage of Cambiata, when they could still sing treble, in most choirs they do, and you never hear the Cambiata voice the way Irving Cooper, whose idea it was, originated it and thought it should sound. It is that low treble sound rather than a scrawny young, you know, it hasn't gone down to that yet. So that's why I think Cormac's later songs are so successful.
I think that the other difference with the Enya song was the actual accompaniment. We, with working with Dominic Ferris and not then having massive budgets to work with lots of other musicians, because that's where your money comes in, we were very fortunate in that that vocal piano combination with the two of them working so well together is what also makes May It Be very different to Enya's, because it doesn't have the additional production that her song has with all the different moody instruments that come in.
Absolutely.
On that too.
I think you're spot on there, Alison. And now Cormac and Dominic Ferris work brilliantly together.
Yeah, they do.
A fantastic combination, no doubt about that.
And that piano vocal creates that magical sound, it really does. But I think with the way that it has been recorded as well, the way Cormac's vocal has been recorded by Simon Hanhart, the whole sort of aspect of the purity of his voice is very much preserved in those recordings, and that's been a conscious decision with the whole of the team that have recorded the music with him.
I've always been particularly drawn to Art Song, you know, which is that piano and vocal for that reason, because it's all about the performance, and that like you mentioned, being in the zone, Cormac.
Yeah.
You know, when you're in the zone and you've got that invisible connection between the pianist and the singer, and it's just this kind of relationship that's happening invisibly. It is the most amazing thing. It's amazing to experience, I'm sure you would agree. And I think for a lot of people, though they can't put their finger on why, it's amazing to listen to as well.
Yeah.
And I think partly by design, and all credit to you, partly, you know, by good fortune, you know, you landed on that with Dominic, the fact that you're obviously both, you know, brilliant performers, and were able to bring out the best in each other in a way that people who wouldn't technically be able to understand what was going on just listened to anything and realised that they were listening to a kind of next level performance.
I think you're right to equate it to Art Song, actually, and it is that close relationship between the accompanist and the singer.
Yeah,
you're right.
And that is so crucial, and that is really what Dominic Ferris does do exceptionally well.
Yeah.
You know, Cormac has been accompanied by pianists, and then he's been accompanied by Dominic Ferris. And, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, Cormac, but it's worlds apart. Would
yeah,
you agree?
Definitely. Dominic's a different level. He just, each take he does is completely different. He doesn't actually read the music. He doesn't obey the music. He just listens to the flow of it and just creates it on the spot. And it's really amazing to watch. And he's very, very talented. And the amount of emotion that he puts into the piano as well is phenomenal. You even just have to watch the videos just to see him, like, just how into it he is. It's quite phenomenal to watch, yeah.
And to hear,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and I do think that's worth emphasising, because obviously for the vast majority of people, that's just not even a context that's in their mind, is it? You know, the kind of mass media that would be consuming the likes of Britain's Got Talent, which of course you did very well on as well, but it's backing tracks, isn't it? Usually you're standing up, you have to sing to a click track. You're not you're not encouraged to off-road and, you know, pull the tempo around. It's not going to work, is it? So it's still a performance. It's still a very valid form of performance, but it's a completely different form of performance. And for some people, they've just never experienced that.
Yeah. 90% of all the tracks that Cormac has recorded with Dominic have not been to a click track.
Yeah.
I think we did one, which was Angel, wasn't it?
With the click.
And we did try Angel without it.
That was only because Dominic got the piano track like on the second take or something like that. And then that was it. And then it was just me in this booth for quite a while on that one, yeah. I think it was. Mm. And we popped a click on it, and then we really did get that one off. That was good. I'm really happy with that one. Mm. That's a good little song.
But the combination, we're very fortunate, has worked so well together.
Yeah.
And they both complement each other so well. But I think, you know, versus, you know, if we look at it from a studio perspective and working in the studio with Dominic, going back to what Matthew said about when you do then go into the likes of BGT and you are singing to a track, tell us a little bit about the BGT experience and what it was like to be on Britain's Got Talent singing run specifically, because what we'd like to then get to is how it was then to sing run 6 months later in your 6 month older voice and the difference between the two. So it's January 2022 now, and you're at the London Palladium singing run for Simon Cowell and the team.
So in 2020, when I was singing run, it was very much high and up here, and the high notes are very much easy to get. My voice hadn't changed at all then. But then once my voice had started changing when I was 12 in 2022, January time-ish, yeah, with BGT, with the judges, that was a lot different. I think the key for the track that we did might have been a bit lower, was it?
Slightly, but
I think
much.
It was just about a tone lower. But even then, the high notes are still a bit of a stretch. So it was weird, definitely singing run a year or so later after I'd sung it so much in 2020. Yeah, that definitely was quite strange. And I sang it at the Darwin Tower Jubilee, Queen's Jubilee event as well. I remember that my voice was not liking going high then.
That
was 6 months later. So another 6 months. It's the same track as well. So my voice had dropped considerably, changed considerably by then. And it was, I remember being, I say backstage, but there wasn't really a stage. It was just like
a tower.
Behind the tower, yeah. and I remember being like, oh, I can't get that high note. And I remember my singing teacher saying, just plant your feet into the ground and the adrenaline should work its magic. Or as Dominic says, a doctor theatre, which definitely came and helped at the Albert Hall as well with my cold and changing voice.
Mm. Now, I've got to bring this up, Cormac, on the subject of singing high notes.
Yes, Martin.
Because I think it was last June when I came to see you, or you came to see me, mm-hmm. I had you singing Stanford in G Magnificat. Do you remember?
At our house.
Yes, it was at your house.
The one time.
You're denying it, but you did. Yeah, you only did it for fun. It wasn't a serious thing.
Is that the
gosh, I'm not going to attempt Stan.
Yeah,
that's the one. If I the Lord, bless me. And it's got a dilly 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 organ part.
You're welcome.
Do you remember singing?
Thank you, Matthew.
Very roughly.
Yeah. But there was a serious point. It was to demonstrate that you could do it. Because there are boys, and we'll talk about Chorister of the Year in a little while, mm-hmm. but there are boys your age who still sing soprano or treble, and they are just as physically on as you are. So it's interesting that people can do this because they're using a part of their voice that you prefer not to use.
Falsetto.
Yeah, falsetto is a controversial word. Mm. I'm going to call it the M2 register, which is when your vocal folds are stretched thin and vibrate, not totally closing and just at the edges. Now, call that falsetto if you like, but it is possible for a boy to produce a pretty good soprano sound in the M2 register if they want to. Now, I'm sure I have it in my book somewhere. Cormac says, I don't want to be a choir boy. Tell us about that, Cormac.
Well, I guess I've kind of just moved away from that now. Yeah, definitely. Technically, I probably could still sing that right now, just it wouldn't sound as good because it's in my M2 or falsetto. And it's... It just sounds a bit...
Oh, yeah, go on, yes. No, give us Stanford
no, no, no. But, yeah, technically, I can do it. It's just... doesn't sound the same as when it did when it was my treble. It sounds a lot more not as, the diction's not as good, and it sounds more like it's more on like a ooey, ahy vowel rather than the e's and the
Well, you're certainly right about vowels, because all sorts of funny things happen to vowels when you get up to that pitch, definitely. All to do with formants and things, which we won't go into detail here.
Yeah, but it feels, I think my treble voice is a lot more, I don't know how to describe it, like clear. But I feel when I was singing, when I sing in falsetto, just for a bit of a laugh in the practice room, it's a bit more like, doesn't sound as good.
So where did Chorister of the Year fit into all of this then? Because tell us about that.
2021?
Correct.
Yeah, Chorister of the Year was October 2021.
Before BGT.
Before BGT, yes. And it was in Salisbury Cathedral. My voice was around about, it was changing, but I was still getting the top A's on Ave Maria. Was it an A or a G? I think it was an A.
It was an A, yeah. I think.
You had no concerns about meeting that?
Yeah, there was no like worry that I wouldn't get it. It was still quite easy. But I feel like that was when my voice was pretty much at its best.
Well, yes, it was. Now, this is the interesting thing. You are right to say your voice was changing on Chorister of the Year. Most boys who get that far, they do have changing voices. We rarely hear an unchanged voice on Chorister of the Year. For some of the reasons we talked about before, it's the maturity and the musicianship that a 10-year-old's just not going to have. But nevertheless, you could get up there. And this is partly to do with performance and adrenaline and just being lost in the music, I think.
Yeah.
If you'd never done the kind of singing you do, you wouldn't have been singing notes up in that range. The voice would have gone by then.
Yeah.
And what I did do, when you were interviewed by Howard Goodall, whoever it was, I ran that interview through some analytical software to find out exactly where your voice was, and it was well interchange, Cormac. Mm. Your speaking voice was quite a long way down towards the what we call the 200... hertz threshold. Yeah. So that's an interesting one.
Yeah.
And at that point, though, we didn't realise, you know, we thought that his voice was unchanged. Yeah. We hadn't met you.
Well, that's what most people think. They don't appreciate how soon voice change actually starts.
We hadn't met you, and because he was still singing so beautifully and so high, we were still of the opinion that his voice was still very much just a treble voice.
Well, I mean, you talk to people who do a lot of this sort of stuff. I mean, Andrew Nethinger, who's recently taken up the Westminster Abbey job, I mean, he's on record recently of saying it's year 8 when the boy's voice is at its best. That's 12 going 13. And voices by that time are changing. And this is one of the interesting things, that it isn't the unchanged voice, it's the voice that's beginning to change. And I think Cormac demonstrated that admirably.
Yeah, definitely.
Good.
I think the Chorister of the Year was an amazing experience for you as wasn't it? Tell us a little bit about the experience itself.
It's quite a while ago now, but
it was in Salisbury Cathedral.
Judges. Yeah, when I went for
that was the final thing.
For the final to sing O Holy Night. It was October, singing a Christmas song was a bit strange. Anyway, once I got onto the stage, onto the little circle platform thingamajiggy, Leslie Garrett decided she needed to go to the loo. So I had to stay on stage for about 10 minutes.
The piano fell off, the piano thing.
I started to perform. And then the piano stool broke while the pianist was playing. And then
you couldn't make it up.
And then so then they stopped, and then Leslie Garrett thought it was a good idea to go to the loo.
To the bathroom.
So then I was on stage for about 10 minutes, really, really nervous.
Standing on the spot.
Yeah. With the spotlight on me, so that's quite quite nerve-wracking.
Of course, it's also the cathedral. The loo wasn't just round the corner.
Yeah, and she had to get unmiked and everything.
And the mic had to go off, and then the mic had to go back on again. Yes,
I'm sure you've forgiven Leslie, though, just in case she does listen.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're over it now.
It was more just the fact that it was, you know, the experience itself of being in the cathedral was amazing. And, you know, from that perspective, to sing such beautiful music in such an amazing building was, you know, a fabulous experience for him. And it was unfortunate, obviously, that the piano still fell apart.
It's very interesting to me from, speaking as a teacher now, kind of as a music teacher, you know, the kind of things that we ask of, you were 12 at that point, 13, 12, 13?
12, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, people of that sort of age, that would not be in it, generally speaking, you know, the sort of general expectations we would have of a 12 or 13-year-old. It's interesting how the rules just sort of go out the window a bit when it comes to art, you know, and it's true of, like, you know, when you're working with young actors and stuff as well, as you expect them to behave like professionals in the situation that you're in, when it's music and it's TV.
Yeah.
And you're expected to behave, well, more than like a professional, really. You're expected just to do exactly as you're told, to stand exactly where you're told, to wait as long as you need to, you know, all this kind of stuff. And yeah, I just wonder, do you have any thoughts on that? Would you agree with that? Kind of, is it slightly strange?
It was, definitely. Everyone just kind of expected, like, all the 12 and 13-year-olds to, like, almost as if they'd been in the business for 20 years, like professionals. And I think quite a few people found that quite strange, being especially treated like it was just normal to, like, be on stage for a while, or, like, taking instructions from a floor manager and, like, all the, and being mic'd up and all this, like, special treatment kind of was quite surreal for a lot of us, I know. So, yeah.
We were very well looked after, though.
Yeah, we were, definitely.
I think from that point of view, you know, the team were excellent.
But I would like to touch on that, though, from the perspective, while we're on Chorister of the Year, I think that is partly a legacy from this kind of traditional chorister kind of world, if you like, and I know Martin touches on that in his How High Should Boys Sing as well. You know, I think you give an example of, like, a, you know, when the minister doing a children's address, you know, during the service, turns to the
Daffodil Sunday.
Yes, no children in the congregation are willing to answer, so he turns to the choir and, like, no, not us. We're the professionals, absolutely. And they are up there doing, as you say, a man's job in a boy's world, or whichever way around it is, a boy's job in a man's world.
You should be so careful these days, because it's an adult's world, and girls can do it as well as boys.
We have
but we're talking about boys just now.
Yes, we are.
Yeah, we are.
Whether they're boys or girls, they're doing an adult's job, aren't they?
They are.
And it'd be just good to talk about that. How do you feel about that? Because there's obviously some really good things about that, and then there's some really challenging things about that. So how would you agree with that? And
yeah, well, I guess when you're that age, really, you just kind of just take it on the chin and just don't really think much of it until someone points it out, like you just did. Like, I didn't really think about it much until it was just pointed out. So I think it's kind of just the norm, which I guess it shouldn't really. Should be treated a bit differently. And yeah.
Well, I think people often underestimate people of your age, Cormac. I've always thought that. It's why I've enjoyed doing the work I do, because give you the chance, and other, you know, young people. Absolutely. Yeah, so this business of you, the young professional, there's a lovely bit in the new book, Cormac, where I've transcribed an interview with you we did about 8-9 months ago, and you are complaining about the other boys at school accusing you of being an opera singer.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Well, it's just people kind of, when they hear, like, the la, kind of just expect, assume that it's opera, which it isn't, which is quite annoying. Not really happened recently, but when people would be like, oh, Cormac, give us a rendition of your opera, or something like that, I'm like... Oh.
Do you think they're just winding you up, or are they genuinely ignorant?
Just genuinely ignorant.
Really?
Yeah.
And wanting to wind him up.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably a bit of both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, this is not the first time I've come across this in my work. constantly, any voice that is accomplished and in a high register, to the, you know, kids at school, it's opera. So that's an issue you have to deal with. But tell us a bit more about how you get on with the, your peers, as they call them, other pupils your own age.
Well, when I was younger, it was a bit more... and when it all started off, people were, like, asking me questions, and some people found it really cool, and there was the people like, oh, that's really cringe, Cormac. I'm like, okay. Or, like, there's just people being nasty about it, saying, oh, Cormac, your song's so bad, or something like that.
And maybe you can be talk about when you were at primary school age, you know, 9, 10, 11, and now that, you know, people are growing up a bit, 13, 14, 15, is there a difference there?
Well, I feel like since the people have grown up with me, since it's changed, since I've become kind of like a bit of an online, like, person, and my personality is online, people are kind of just used to it and don't really think twice about it. And they're like, oh, that's really cool, Cormac, and that's enough said. Or like, oh, I like your new song, Cormac, and that's it. Or there's the people that kind of take the mick, but that's not really recently. That was more when I was younger. But now it's just, it's kind of just normal, and people know it's there, and it's not really said about much anymore. Yeah,
that's interesting, because that I've heard, you know, times before, and, you know, because I've been doing this work a long time. And the mickey taking goes on more in primary school and with the younger age groups, which I suppose is not surprising, because at secondary school people are maturing a bit more. And so that is your experience.
Yeah, definitely.
Any difference between girls' and boys' reactions?
Probably to avoid that question, because I went to a boys' school.
Yes, I was forgetting that. That's an interesting one, though, isn't it? Do you think... Well, let's put the question another way. You go to a boys' school.
Went to a boys' school.
You went to a boys' school. Yeah. What do you go to now?
A girls' school, Martin.
This is going really well. They're having great fun in the control room. We were talking a minute ago about... the mickey taking is more likely to happen with younger children. Now, you were at a boys' only school when you were younger, and you're now at a co-educational school. Do you think that's made a difference as well, as apart from just getting older?
No, I don't think so. Maybe.
I only ask because in some of the boys I've spoken to in the past... they started to get girl fans in their teenage years that they wouldn't have had before. Not you?
Not really, no.
Interesting.
Your face says otherwise. But...
No.
Put you on the spot there. Okay, fair enough. But it does raise this whole question of who your audience is. As you grow and mature, how does what we call the demographic of your audience change, or does it? Because the time is going to... I think it's true to say, Cormac, disagree if you like, but when you're a young treble, most of the people listening to you would be old enough to be your mother or your grandparent. Yeah. Would you agree?
Yeah.
Well, you can't be a grandson all your life.
Yeah.
You're going to get older. How's the relationship with audiences changing already, and how will it change?
Well, I guess I've got a very mixed demographic of people that listen to my music. There is quite a few young people that do listen to my music. Not necessarily in England, it's more overseas, mixture of different areas. But it definitely is the more older side of people. But as I'm getting older, I think it's more they don't really want to listen to a teenage singer, rather than they'd more likely want to listen to a treble singer. With the more, I think it's the sweet, innocent tone that quite the older people quite like. So yeah.
If well, I could just intervene there just as well, though, I think from my perspective, Cormac actually is really very fortunate because not just with his singing, there is the person that he is and the engagement that he gives to his audience beyond his singing. And I would say actually that whilst we know that, of course, there are people who love treble singing and who have followed Cormac because they love treble singing, and yes, of course, you know, that's what they want to do and they will move on and listen to other treble singers as they start to come through, there is actually an awful lot of people who go out of their way to comment on Cormac's videos where we have new voice to express their support for him through his voice change and how willing and keen they are to continue to listen to him singing and to support him when he gets to his more adult voice stage. And we're actually, you know, very grateful for that because this is very much uncharted waters for us as, you know, a team of people that work with Cormac as he sings through his voice change. And I've been really very pleasantly surprised at how supportive
people have been. Well, I think I need to say I have been as well because, you know, boy trebles come and go. And you're great for a while and then your voice is changed and the next one comes along. But I think part of your success, Cormac, is you're more than just a boy treble. You're an artist. And there is evidence that you're taking your audience with you. And like your mum says, there have been some very supportive comments. And it's you they're supporting, I think. They like you as a performer.
And we're very grateful for that because, definitely. You know, one of the things that we were very conscious of was, as you say, boy trebles come and then they go. Cormac alluded to it earlier as well, and they disappear and then they come back when they're 16 or 17. And we didn't ever have a plan beyond when his voice changed, we would stop doing what we are doing. And actually, it's been the support of the people who have been on this journey with him that has actually encouraged us not to stop. But that is only possible because Cormac has been very fortunate that his voice change has been a relatively stable change. And he is also now able to record in his new voice without sounding like the neighbour's cat. You know, I mean, and we just never knew whether that would happen
well,
or not.
Well, yes, I mean, we were worried about this a year ago.
Yeah, absolutely,
we were. Very concerned. Now, you're right. Cormac is very talented, but he's also been lucky.
Absolutely.
The way his voice has changed has gone actually very well. There is a phase, call it the high mutation, or in Cooksey speak, it's stage 3 or mid-voice 2A. You went through that in about 2 or 3 months, Cormac, when you, your mother says, like the neighbour's cat. You weren't going to sing in public.
Yeah.
But that happened quite quickly for you.
Yeah.
And I was looking at, you know, analysis of your new voice only this morning, actually.
Yeah.
And you have been lucky. It's coming back and it's developing interest in its harmonic content quite a lot more quickly than a lot of voices do. Yeah. So in your case, I think a combination of talent and luck. And it's great that you're taking your audience with you. But are we at the end of the journey yet?
In the next episode, we will pick this conversation up again. Thank you so much for listening, and for those who watched it on my YouTube channel, thank you so much for all of your lovely comments. We really do appreciate it.